couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films, The Hunger Games, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. That's just one movie, calm down. Trolls Band Together, Leo, Monarch, Legacy of Monsters, and Scott Pilgrim Takes Off. I'm also going to be talking about some news of the Trailer Park and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Village of the Damned. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Blue Sky or Mastodon, I'm at Kevin Carr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The one sticking point with some people in the SAG agreement, or the SAG-AFTRA agreement, is the use of AIs. There are some people that are hard-lined against using AI, and Justine Bateman made a lot of stink about this, and she knows where she's coming from, because she's just not Mallory from Family Ties. She's not just an actor. She's got, like, a degree in computer engineering, and she's consulted with the use of generative AI, so she knows about the technology. She's not just an actor just kind of blown off steam. But she's like a 100% don't use any AI, and I think that's probably getting a little bit too overboard, because the reality is AI technology is going to work its way into almost every aspect of our life. I mean, we do need to have sort of restrictions so that it doesn't plagiarize or copy things that you can otherwise own. And so I think that that's the stuff we have to watch for. But trying to not have AI is like saying you're not going to use computers in the production of your movie. I mean, the very least, you're going to edit it on a computer unless you're going to build a Steam Deck. So I think at a certain point, there's going to be some more discussion about the AI. But I think it's good that SAG held out as long as they could. I think it's good that SAG-AFTRA held out as long as they could to put that discussion in the forefront. The next piece of news I want to talk about is something that you may have heard already. It's been kind of floating around the film circles. And that's something that's going on over in Warner Brothers Discovery. There was a movie they were working on. It was just going to go to Max, HBO Max, the old HBO Max, which is Warner Brothers' streaming service. It's called Coyote vs. Acme, and it was a live-action CGI hybrid movie that essentially has Wile E. Coyote suing Acme for all of their equipment never working when he's trying to catch the Roadrunner. And he had people with some big names in there. You got, like, John Cena's involved in the movie. I don't know what he plays. I mean, the Coyote from Looney Tunes, I don't think he speaks. He doesn't have the Wile E. Coyote genius line.
Allow me to introduce myself. My name is Wile E. Coyote. Genius.
But it also has Will Forte as the sleazy lawyer from Acme. Well, Coyote versus Acme was just going to be thrown out. They were just going to bury it. And it was going to give them like a $30 million tax write-off. Supposedly they'd spent $60, $70 million on the film. And it's basically completed. It's basically done. They were just gonna bury it. And the filmmakers got PO'd, because if this sounds familiar, they did that last year with Batgirl. And I remember the line everyone says, "Oh, how bad it was Batgirl. How bad did that have to be for it to get crushed?" Apparently not that bad. It had nothing to do with the quality of the film. Also, considering it was David Zaslav who made this decision ultimately, and he's the one who called The Flash the greatest superhero movie ever made, and we all know that's not true. But he's up to his old tricks again. He's burying a movie for a tax write-off, which I get it. There's the books that you're dealing with and everything, but you're also dealing with a bunch of people who worked and put blood, sweat, and tears into it. And I remember saying this to a friend of mine, a colleague of mine in radio, and he's like, "Well, you know, they do own it." I go, "That's true, but you're a radio host. Imagine if the company came and told you that they needed you to voice track 6 months of shows, pre-record 6 months of shows, and you went and worked overtime and you got a bunch of your friends to kind of come turn in favors so you can do this massive amount of work, and you went and got guests that were promoting things. And then when you bring in those 6 months of shows and you give it to the radio station is like, yeah, we're just going to throw this out. Because we own it and we can. And you got paid anyways. But it's not about the money. The whole point is, where would his reputation be? Would he be able to book any of those guests ever again? Because then they wouldn't trust that they'd actually be put on the air. And there's a difference between what you can do and what you should do. Could you buy a whole bunch of pizzas, take it down to a homeless shelter, and just eat all the pizzas yourself and then throw the rest on the floor and kick it around? Well, you could, but that's kind of a cruel thing to do. And so there was a big kerfuffle going on social media, and the filmmakers behind Coyote versus Acme got really PO'd. And they were like, hey, look, it was testing well. It was something that was going to be a good movie, and they just killed it for tax write-off purposes. Well, they made such a stink about it that Warner Brothers was like, oh, okay, well, we'll let other studios, you can shop it around to other studios. Which, by the way, imagine, how stupid is that? Warner Brothers, which has been known for the Warner Brothers Looney Tunes cartoons for decades, are suddenly like, Amazon might be doing a Looney Tunes movie. This just shows that David Zaslav has no respect or understanding of long-term legacy properties. And then a congressman from Texas has come out and he's like, look, there should be an investigation in this. Because to do this, to build something and then destroy it is anti-competitive. Warner Brothers is still trying to just do whatever it can to make the books work out, but have no care in the world. But then there was this other little story that kind of circulated, and it basically said that there's a bunch of people who had meetings with Warner Brothers this week, and they just kind of put the brakes on those. And I don't blame them. What filmmaker is going to want to go to Warner Brothers and work on something that they're going to eventually possibly just destroy? And yeah, you got paid, but you wasted all that time to build a career and build your product. This is part of the problem with Warner Brothers Discovery right now, is they just see everything as a potentially disposable element rather than something that people actually worked on. And it's the work on that that also gives you prestige, and that's why people seek that. Nobody wants to make something that never gets seen. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That's on means it's time to roll into the trailer park. Two animated films I'm going to quickly hit. The first one is The Garfield Movie, not to be confused with Garfield the Movie, which starred Bill Murray like 20 years ago. This is coming to theaters on May 24th. You deserve to be seen
with somebody as bright. Say when.
Never, John. Bury me in cheese.
I apologize in advance. The eating you're about to see will not be pretty. And if you have young children, this would be a good time for them to leave the room. You ain't never seen nobody this
high. Hey, Junior, this is Vic, my father.
You ever jump the train?
I've never jumped.
Here's that stop.
I'm not sold on Chris Pratt as the voice of Garfield. I mean, I know he's the go-to guy because he happened to... I don't think that he contributed at all to Super Mario Brothers being a big hit. I think he was just lucky to have the part. And I don't know, I mean, maybe the Jurassic World. I think he was definitively good as a voice actor in the Lego Movie. Maybe not the second one. But he's not Garfield. He just doesn't feel... I thought they did a good job when they brought in Bill Murray because you didn't have Lorenzo Music anymore. And Lorenzo Music was the definitive voice of Garfield. But I don't know. I just wish they would have gotten to the more grumpy, lazy guy. Give me a call. I don't know. This one might be cute. Who knows? Inside Out 2 is the next one, which comes to theaters on June 14th.
What is that?
Okay, let's clear it all out. It's demo day!
Demo? Wait, what's happening?
Ah, who are you people?
Orange? Who made the console orange?
Hello? Ah! Oh my gosh, I'm anxiety. Where can I put my stuff?
A new emotion. Wow.
Oh, I'm sorry. We wanted to make such a good first impression.
What do you mean, we?
This one looks funny. This is a typical high-concept Pixar. I think it's going to do well because Inside Out has such good juju behind it. But these are hard to do now. Like Elemental, you really had to get people on board on that one. But I think Inside Out 2 should be cute. I have faith in it. This is perfect Pixar. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Trolls Band Together and Scott Pilgrim Takes Off.
In my pocket, got that good soul in my feet. I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops. Ooh, I
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. Let's jump into the movie reviews and talk about the new Trolls movie, Trolls Band Together. The trolls must travel to a distant land to save a long-lost brother from being held hostage for his talent.
Baby Branch!
I'm John Dory.
Branch's brother.
What?
Former brother.
Branch, our brother is being held captive in a diamond prison.
And there's only one thing that's powerful enough to shatter diamond.
The perfect family harmony.
We're here looking for our brother.
Oh my gosh, hello!
Is your dad King Peppy?
Yeah?
Poppy, I'm your sister.
My what?
Whoa.
Hey man, am I the only one without a long lost sibling?
I hate the troll dolls. I've always hated, you know, those little rust trolls. I've always hated those troll dolls. I thought they were creepy. They looked like the Olsen twins from Full House in the 80s. But the first movie I thought was okay. I think the first movie, I had problems with the first movie because it was basically not allowing introverts to be introverted. It was like, everyone's got to be happy. Everyone's got to get involved. Everyone's got to want to do group activities. You know, sometimes people just want to go home and sit in their room and watch TV. And there's nothing wrong with that. Trust me. Not everybody has to be the life of the party. So it was very, I don't want to use the term discriminatory or anything like that because that's a very harsh word. Because my kids are at times very introverted and I'm very introverted. And I've seen that where somebody will be like, well, aren't they getting involved in activities? And you're like, yeah, they're really not interested. He doesn't want to do sports. He doesn't want to do an after school club. Let him find his own way. You don't have to be gregariously involved. And that was one of my problems with the first Trolls. Plus, it also had this weird pharmaceutical angle where they had the Boggins, what were those things? And they'd eat the trolls and that would make them happy. And I'm like, well, what are they just, are those things just happy pills? I mean, it doesn't make any, anyways. But I thought the sequel, the one that came out during COVID, I thought that second movie was really quite good. I really enjoyed the second Troll movie. This one's kind of somewhere in the middle. There's parts of it that I think are edgy and they're weirdly subversive. There's literally a scene where they go on a drug trip. There's no other way to describe it but a psychedelic drug trip. And I know it's like tipping a hat to the old, you know, movies from the 70s and 80s. But one of the trolls puts his hand in front of his face and he's like, oh, I can see lines kind of thing. And I'm like, dude, that's LSD. I mean, most kids aren't going to get it. But, I mean, the parents in the audience, I'm like, well, that's pretty on-the-nose drug humor. The other thing I find just weird in about this movie is the whole story is Branch, who's played by Justin Timberlake, his brother is kidnapped by this pop duo who basically keeps him in a cage and sucks his talent out so they can perform on stage without having to hone their own talents and their own abilities. And so it's really digging at some of the pop music stars of today, or maybe not the stars, but people who don't have real artistry or talent, and it's just sort of like covered up with flash and glitz and glamour and sampling other people. I mean, that's clearly what they're referring to, is sampling other stuff. I mean, there's a whole AI argument you can make about this as well. But then it goes back and it's like, no, we need something really awesome, like NSYNC. And I'm like, was NSYNC really the most unique? And I mean, sure, yeah, they have their fans. But I mean, NSYNC was not Queen. NSYNC was not David Bowie. NSYNC wasn't the Beatles. You know what I mean? There's some depth to these other artists out here, but the Trolls movies in general sometimes do tip their hats and make some of the worst artists the icons of it. It really struggles with how much it adores pop music. And so that gets in the way a little bit. Some of the story's a little goofy. I mean, it's cute and it's for kids. I mean, certainly kids can watch it even with all the drug humor in it. I mean, it's not as clever as its predecessor, but this has some generally funny, creative, and alarmingly subversive moments. You know, like I said, I had to go see this movie on a Saturday morning, which is very rare for me now. And I actually kind of enjoyed it in a theater full of kids and their stupid parents. So it must have been pretty decent. So I'm going to have to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about another animated, it's a series, not a movie, And that is Scott Pilgrim Takes Off. Forgive me, this trailer, there's not a whole lot of dialogue in it because it's a Scott Pilgrim's trailer. This anime adaptation of the classic graphic novels tells the story of a slacker competing for a girl's affection.
We are sex bomb! 1, 2, 3, 4!
Now, when I first heard this and I looked it up, I was like, are they just going to remake Scott Pilgrim versus the World? Which I appreciated for Edgar Wright's style. He was the perfect one to make that movie. But that movie flopped. Nobody saw that movie. And I think part of the reason nobody saw the Scott Pilgrim versus the World movie is because it has a very narrow audience. You had to be a millennial and you had to have a narrow focus on like that indie music, but not like clubbing or anything. You had to have a very specific musical taste to even like it. So I just thought it really cut very deep into its own fan base. And I know people who swear by that movie. They think it's the greatest movie ever. I didn't particularly like it. Part of it is I don't think Ramona Flowers is a very... She's the quintessential manic pixie dream girl, literally a dream girl. And I don't feel any depth of it. And I've not watched the whole series of Scott Pilgrim Takes Off, but from what I understand, it does follow the graphic novel a little bit more in such that it's not the same story as the movie. It's just not a rehash of the movie. And I appreciated that because I got to the end of the first episode. I'm like, oh, hey, this is not just them going to rehash, what is it, 7 different fights so he can go out with Ramona. I still don't think they give much character development to Ramona. She still exists for no other reason for Scott Pilgrim to pine for her or her to pine for him. I mean, there's literally a whole segment where she's like, I don't want to talk about past. I don't want to talk about my past. I don't want to talk about my future. I don't want to talk about my dreams or what I want to do. I just want to enjoy the here and now. And I'm like, that's a real reductive girlfriend to have. I mean, there's no depth to her. There's no personality. All of the Ramona personality is spread around among her 7 evil exes. But I think it goes more into those characters, which is kind of interesting. The other thing that's kind of sweet about it is it uses all of the same actors from Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Forget that they're in their 30s and 40s now. So here's the thing. If you're a Scott Pilgrim fan, you're going to go crazy over this. And it's done in the comic book drawing style, and it's animated like an anime. So it's the lines and the movement. I'm not a huge fan of anime because there's like tropes that permeate it that I find kind of annoying. It's not my kind of thing. It's not my cup of tea. But if you like anime, I recognize all these things from anime into this. And I'm like, this really plays into what Scott Pilgrim should be if you're going to bring it to life on, well, at this point, the small screen. But anyways, I mean, it diverts from the 2010 film, but it keeps that energy up, though it still is weighed down by overwhelming millennial angst. But then again, like I said, that makes it authentic Scott Pilgrim. So I can respect it. I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about The Hunger Games, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, which is the longest name movie of the week, and Leo, which is the shortest name. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about that Hunger Games prequel. The Hunger Games, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. It's a long title. This prequel to The Hunger Games looks into the early days of the deadly competition.
Mr. Snow,
what are The Hunger Games for?
The Hunger Games, they're to punish the districts. Those tributes don't have a choice.
Your role is to turn these children into spectacles, not survivors.
If you want to protect people, then it's essential to accept what human beings are and what it takes to control them.
I mean, there are some big names in it. You got like Viola Davis and Jason Schwartzman. I don't know if he's a big name, but he's somewhat recognizable. And Peter Dinklage, of course. And Rachel Zegler, I don't really count her as a recognizable face because she's only done a couple movies. I mean, they're big movies, but she's only done a couple of them. But really nobody else. They have so few people that people will recognize in the movie that they have to throw Donald Sutherland's face in there. He's not in the movie. His character is. Coriolanus Snow is in the movie, but he's played by the guy who does Billy the Kid on, well, it was Epic and now it's MGM Plus. But he doesn't look like that because he's got blonde hair. I mean, it's I think of all things that is this movie has a danger from, it's that it doesn't have anyone that anyone really knows or has a track record, aside from these flamboyant, crazy people that they throw in as secondary roles. Now, like Viola Davis is the new bad guy, but you know, yeah. Okay, first of all, you can tell I'm sort of whinging about this. I did not like this movie. I like The Hunger Games. Yeah, it's a complete ripoff of Battle Royale. You know, it has this throwback to the dystopian movies like 1984 and a film, you know, in books like that. But I think part of what made that work was it was an interesting concept, and then it gets a little overdeveloped. It's just one of those things that like is a teen book. That first book did well. That first story is compelling. And the second one wasn't bad, but by the time they got to the Mockingjay stuff, two things. First of all, that's not the best book, and it's frustrating, and it's, I don't think, terribly well-written. And then, because it was trendy at the time, they said, oh, let's extend the Golden Goose, and they shot two movies that were both overly long and plotted a bit, and they kind of killed the franchise. And then this one, they come back, and they said, well, we'll just make one big, overlong, dull, plotting movie. This film's 2 hours and 37 minutes long and has no business being that way. Now, I've looked up the plot on the book, and it looks like it's a relatively accurate depiction, so good for them. But there's so much about this movie that are frustrating. The bottom line is, even with all the other things that I could talk about, it just feels like a pale imitation of the original Hunger Games. After the Hunger Games, there are a whole string of movies. Everything from Divergent to The Fifth Wave to The Maze Runner. They had all these movies that they were trying to mine all of these dystopian teen books. And these books actually really weren't that great. The Hunger Games clicked, and a lot of it's on the shoulders of Jennifer Lawrence. And nothing against Rachel Zegler. I have defended her in the past, but Jennifer Lawrence was a movie star the very first time she was seen on screen. And having to follow up as the heroine after her is not an easy task. Part of the other problem with Rachel Zegler, and this isn't her fault, this is the way the story is in the book, the character sings. And she's always singing, and she's like doing performances, and I'm like, who is this? Is this Jack Black? Do they have to sing in every movie that they're in? She didn't say sing in Shazam. Which, I don't know, that wouldn't have made the movie any worse. But this movie just, it goes on. And it's weird because there are some really interesting points, you know, that can be politically made about how fascism rises. And there's some pushing towards fascism in multiple areas in the world. And on top of it, there's the stuff that you can almost interpret as they talk about dealing with the districts and sort of having, you know, a society, two-tier society. You can have these things that you can, that can tie together with the rhetoric surrounding the whole Hamas-Israeli thing going on right now, that war in the Middle East. So it seems very prescient, but part of the problem, like the whole fascism angle, what bothered me about that is these characters like Viola Davis, I mean, she looks mad. She's just this big ball of insanity. She looks like the character of Anxiety from Inside Out 2, if you've actually watched that full trailer. That's the problem, is that's not what fascism presents itself as. Fascism presents itself as relatively benign or almost unthreatening until it gets power and starts consolidating power. And that's the stuff that we got to worry about in the real world. But I mean, overall, the biggest sin of this movie is it was just boring. It was long. You know, rather than splitting a book into two dull, overlong, and bloated films, they've just made one dull, overlong, bloated film. I mean, it's like the film ends, and there's another hour. It felt like it should have been like a 3-episode series on TV, like on Peacock or something. Oh, I was so bored with this movie. It just was not good. It just does not have the same click, and the same charm, and the same spark that the first Hunger Games did. I'm going to say it sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Leo. This is another animated film. It's on Netflix. I think it's in theaters this weekend. You can actually go see it in theaters this weekend. Drops on Netflix, I think, on Tuesday, right before Thanksgiving. In Leo, Adam Sandler stars as a lizard class pet who starts to give advice to the fifth graders and becomes their friend.
No animal wants to be locked up. I wasted my life.
This year, every student has to take home a class pet.
This is my shot.
Are you nuts?
So I go with these kids, then I escape, and then I really live. It's on. Mother of Godzilla!
What was that?
You just spoke! Mom!
No!
You talk!
No! People can't! No!
This first hit my radar a couple weeks ago when I talked about it on the trailer park. And I know there's a lot of people who just want to hate everything Adam Sandler does. I kind of respect what he's done. He's like, look, I'm not going for accolades or anything. I'm just going to make movies that I think are funny. And some of them I disagree with him. I don't think they're funny. But the fact that he's making movies, he's producing stuff that he enjoys making. And good for him. And so he's involved in this one. And he's the lizard, but he and his team are involved in it. And it is a little off-putting because it's part musical, so it has these songs in it that are they for as awkward sometimes as songs present themselves in a musical, it's weirdly very awkward in this. I don't know if the musical route would have been the best choice in this. That's okay. I mean, honestly, it's a cute movie. It's Adam Sandler, so you're gonna get some crass humor. You know, he's in the terrarium with Bill Burr plays a tortoise. Or a turtle. And, you know, there's a lot of urine jokes. A lot of urine and poop jokes. Because it's an animal thing. And so there's going to be a lot of jokes about that. And Adam Sandler does his, like, you know, wackety-schmackety, you know, all the noises and stuff. So, yeah, if you just hate Adam Sandler, you're going to not have a problem with this. But, I mean, I thought this was kind of a cute movie. I mean, it's different from something you'd see from Pixar or Disney. It's got its own style and its own humor and its own charm to it. I was surprised at how much it kept my attention. I mean, my focus went in and out, but I found myself really enjoying, especially just little moments and nuggets throughout. So it's at times it's uneven, but it's still a sweet story of friendship and growing up. I mean, you can learn a lot from it. It's good to watch with the family, if you don't mind a couple poop jokes. I'm going to say that Leo kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Monarch, Legacy of Monsters, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Village of the Damned. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's wrap things up and do some more stuff that's like more home cinema stuff. So let's talk about from Apple TV Plus, and that is Monarch Legacy of Monsters. This series tells the origin of the organization that studies and tries to contain the Kaiju Titans.
This is the world we live in. Monsters are an inescapable reality.
Those files belong to us. They are more important than you could possibly imagine.
This is going to give me nightmares.
Now, you can choke down that Monarch lie. Or we can find out what really happened.
Before it's too late.
Ah!
when they did the first in this series of Godzilla movies, the one from 2014. I don't think they focused as much on Monarch there, but they teased it at the end that there was more stuff. And then, of course, you had Kong Skull Island, and you had Godzilla King of All Monsters, and you had Godzilla versus Kong. So they started to cross these over. And I was not a huge fan of Gareth Edwards' Godzilla, mainly because I don't think he had enough in him to actually do a bunch of Godzilla scenes. He kind of threw it all together for one or two big scenes, and then the rest was more about not showing Godzilla. Which, if you watch any Godzilla movies, you gotta have Godzilla stepping on houses and peoples, for crying out loud. I really enjoyed the other movies, because those were SmackDown movies. Those were movies where they had multiple fights with the monsters, and it was the spectacle and everything. And I loved how they were tying it together, and how there was this company, Monarch, or this organization, that tried to study and control these things. And when I heard they were making a MonsterVerse series, I was really excited. And I remember I said when the screener showed up in my account, I was like, oh, let me start watching it. And then I'm like, Here's the thing. All the stuff you want from a kaiju series is there. You've got giant monsters. You've got people searching for them. You've got scientists figuring it out. You've got radiation. You've got the background stuff. And yes, you have scenes with giant monsters. But in my opinion, not enough. It reminds me of when I was a kid and I'd watch The Incredible Hulk on TV growing up. They had a rule that he could only Hulk out, I think he'd Hulk out two or three times an episode. And actually, when they got to a later season, they dialed it back and only allowed him Hulk out once or twice or something like that. And it was a budgetary issue. But you, as a kid, you'd sit around and you'd wait for the whole episode for him to have the Hulk out. And it's like, yeah, that's great. And that's kind of what I feel like with Monarch, is you're waiting through the whole episode to see a giant monster. And then, you see one. And there's an episode where Godzilla shows up, and you're like, that's really cool. And, oh, that was it? That's all of Godzilla we get? Okay. All right, when's he going to show up again? Oh, wait, not until, like, episode 7, you know? I don't know when he ends up showing up again. I've seen 4 or 5 episodes of this. And then it falls into the problems that some of these dramas, sort of like when, like at the time Lost became a big thing, 2004 and beyond, television matured into a different type of long form drama. And they did that with multiple series where it wasn't just a procedural. But the problem with those is they ended up having to pad, because they have to have 24 episodes a season if there wasn't a writer's strike. And so some of those seasons of Lost really feel padded, especially now if you go back and look at them. And it made me question back then. I'm like, I now see why British series are sometimes as short as 3 or 4 episodes and usually not much longer than 6 or 7. Every now and then you see a British series with 10 or 12 or 13 episodes, but that's rare. So they pad it out with the human story and stuff. And the problem is when you try to make some of the characters too relatable, you add too much angst into them. Like there's a whole subplot about this girl. She's half Japanese and she goes back to Japan because her father, she got word that he died. And she goes to his home and finds a whole nother family. And she has to team up with her, what would be a half brother, to go try and find him or what, find out what happened to him and what he was involved in. But they're sniping and angry at each other, and I'm just like, oh my god, get over your angst. I'm so tired of that crap. And that part, it just weights it down, because they spend more time whinging about the fact that their father was a cheating SOB, and then they do seeing monsters, and that's my big problem. There's some cool things in there though. Like they got Wyatt Russell playing a younger version of a character and Kurt Russell playing the character in modern times, although they even give a nod and they say he should be in his 90s, and Kurt Russell's is not in his 90s. But, you know, I don't, it has all the elements you'd want from a MonsterVerse series, but it just spreads them so thin over the length of the show. I mean, it gives you what you want, it just, at sometimes you feel like you're wasting some time to get there. So I'm going to have to say, it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on an older film. It's something I stumbled onto. Not stumbled onto. I sought out. I love this movie. Village of the Damned. It was made in the early 60s. I think 1960 was when it was made. 60 or 62. A British town falls asleep, then wakes up to find the women pregnant with mysterious children.
Have we established anything about the origins of these children?
There is a possibility of the transmission of energy.
Are you aware of life on another planet? Why are you so nervous when an aircraft flies above you?
Until recently, we haven't been able to make our control reach as far as a high aircraft.
Well, now you have, is that it?
There's nothing you can do to stop us. Leave us alone.
There's a story behind this for me, why I like it. When I was a kid, I was like in first grade, and the local library, you got to remember, when I was, you know, I was in first grade in the mid 70s. So you didn't have VCRs, you didn't have streaming, you didn't have any sort of home. If you wanted to watch an old movie, you basically had to catch it on some late night TV show or go see it at a theater when they do a library release kind of thing. And at the local library, they had 16 millimeter prints of some science fiction classics, and they did it over the course of a month. And so they had The Thing from Another World and Invasion of the Body Snatchers, which caused me not to sleep for a couple months. And then they had It Came from Outer Space. I think I talked about that a couple weeks ago, and my dad didn't take me to that one because he didn't like the 3D glasses. What, Dad, it's not about you. And then A Village of the Damned. And everyone knows The Thing from Another World and Invasion of the Body Snatchers, but not as many people know about Village of the Damned. It's based on a book by John Wyndham called The Midwich Cuckoos, which isn't a bad little book. It's a breezy little 50s short novel. And I found this movie fascinating because everyone in the city falls asleep, and they don't know why. They don't know if they don't think it's radiation. They don't think it's a gas, but somehow everybody falls asleep. And when they wake up, all the women are pregnant. Everyone of childbearing age is pregnant. And of course, that causes problems for like teenagers who hadn't had sex yet to like this woman, her husband was overseas during the time. And of course, he thinks she's been cheating. And she's like, I just got pregnant. I don't know how this happened. And then they give birth to these kids, and they all have this blonde hair, and they have these eyes that glow, and they're creepy and weird, but they're still raising them because they're their children. But it becomes very clear as it moves on that there is something unique about these kids, and, you know, the implication being they were, you know, maybe transmuted into there, somehow beamed into the women's womb by some sort of entity from outer space or another dimension. They don't know. And these kids are very, very smart, and they have this psychic power, and they can control people's actions. And then it becomes a reality that they say, oh, this is a threat. It's a very neat and well-written piece. Now, they did a remake of it. John Carpenter remade it in the mid-90s. And that one's okay. It's notable because it stars Christopher Reeve. And he shot it right before he had his accident and broke his neck. But it was like one of the last movies he did. And it's one of those movies where John Carpenter didn't do a really good job in adapting it. He took some big swings, and they weren't terribly good. There was something subdued about the original British version that really, really works. So it's out there. I think I ended up having to buy it. It was like $6 on like a VOD thing to own. And I'm like, yeah, because I'll watch that over a couple times. So yeah, I mean, it's a chilling story of passive alien invasion and plenty of paranoia. So I'm going to have to say Village of the Damned, the original, totally rocks. I would say the remake kind of sucks, but the original totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
And that's it. Next week is Thanksgiving weekend, so I'm going to be talking about Wish and some Thanksgiving movies, even though you probably won't hear it until after Turkey Day. But until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.